CliffCentral.com.
Are we ready? CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday, and Candice Mama is with us, which is always great. We just had a little update on what's going on the continent from JJ Cornish in African Analysis, and he reminded us, Happy Africa Day.
Right.
Right. So,
what are we meant to do for Africa Day?
And it's one of those things where
be grateful.
Yeah.
If you're okay. In South Africa.
Yeah, okay.
Be grateful you're not in Eritrea or the Congo. That's what you do.
Oh, yeah.
So I can do that. That's fine.
One of the other places that you should be grateful that you don't live is North Korea. I mean, for obvious reasons.
Oh.
But there are other reasons that you can't live in North Korea. Do you want to know what they are?
Let us know.
Well, CA, I know you know all about this because you've done your research, but they have banned mullets. So if you grow a mullet, not that anyone wants a mullet particularly. I mean, Candice, you went through the stage where you shaved the one side. You still do it. Okay.
Oh, I'm still. Okay. I love that Gareth was like, you went through a stage. I'm like, no, Gareth.
Still there firmly.
But that's not a mullet. I mean, a mullet is a horrible
mullet-ish.
Thing. Right?
Mullet-ish.
Nah, I don't know. It's not even.
Mullet adjacent.
Okay, mullet adjacent. Fine. But you also have pierced ears?
Oh no, I am literally the poster child of everything you're about to mention.
Okay,
mention away, and I will show the people.
Candice would be arrested because they have banned in North Korea. They've banned mullets, piercings, skinny jeans.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Oh God, that's me. That's literally just Candice. This is me, the mullet. This is my piercing and my skinny jeans. I'm not going to stand up and show you. So literally I'm the poster child of what North Korea, they just need to take a picture of me and put it at the airport.
And just say,
put it at the airport.
This is what we don't want.
You're like, if you look like this, don't enter. Yeah. Go home. Turn right around, get back on the plane and leave.
So this is so ridiculous to me. They're calling these things capitalistic fashion, and the government is having a crackdown on this.
They actually
have their youth organization going to roll out and enforce these rules within the country and to make sure that this doesn't happen. They're trying to get rid of
Western decadence.
Fashion trends is what they call it. They're trying to rid the country of that. What nonsense.
It's insane because South Korea, like, probably has some of the best fashion in the world, right? Like, I mean, if you look at South Korean street style, like, all of it is beautiful.
Yeah, right.
And then North Korea is, like, banning everything that is aesthetic. But then again, let me also backtrack and say, as much as I'd love to judge this, I feel like if I had too much power on my shoulders, I too would become insane. I probably wouldn't ban the things that are banned, but I mean, I would ban Crocs. I would feel like if I had that much power,
Let's live a little dictatorial fantasy here. So I agree with you. When you said Crocs, I was like, yes, that's what I would ban as well. So I would ban Crocs. I would ban people from wearing track pants outside of the house. I don't think that's right.
Oh no.
I would ban a lot of people with very ugly feet, but just to be safe, I'd ban everyone from wearing, you know, flops, like slip slops, whatever you want to call them. I would ban those. Mm-hmm. What else would I ban? I would ban face tattoos. I don't think anyone should have a face tattoo, right?
Well,
no, anything up here. Like face tattoo and neck and scar. Oh no, not do that.
Good. And
I have two things that come to mind.
Go
now.
Ahead. What would yours be?
The first is I would ban any sort of sport T-shirt if your team is not playing on that day. Yes, I know sports is not my thing. And it seems like a personal attack, but I cannot stand it seeing someone in all like Arsenal gear out for lunch. Sorry.
You know, I am with you.
Decent clothing on. You are at a fine establishment and come and enjoy the restaurant and have lunch. You are not supporting the Gunners on a Thursday afternoon, David. So I would ban that.
pants. Yeah.
Secondly, I would ban high-waisted pants. They just, I don't know. It's a ladies thing, and you know that it just they go so far up your waist, and then they make you look like you have a long ass. I don't think they look good, so I'd ban those.
See, he's adding a lot of things to this. All right, Candace, what would you immediately ban if you could ban anything? Go for it.
I mean, Crocs, as I said, was my number one go-to. I was like, mm-hmm. no one deserves to be seeing that nonsense.
I'm with you.
I mean, why do you even buy Crocs? They make me so mad. Mm-hmm. And then men who wear bootleg jeans and running trainers, like there's nothing that drives me more mad. Bootleg. I'm like, why are you wearing a flare pants with a running sneaker? Actually, a flare pants on a man is not a great look.
No.
So yeah, those two things. I'm like, why do they even make flare pants for men? I mean, it just makes me so sad, so sad. So those are the two things. I'm sure there's more. Honestly, like if I had Kim Jong-un time, I'm pretty sure my list would be very extensive. So, you know, I don't want to diss him.
I don't want anyone who's overweight wearing one of those things which exposes your stomach. So
a
I think
top.
A crop top. Yeah.
Jared.
I reckon if you're fat, you should not be allowed to wear a crop top. Sorry. Not on. No. First of all, it's embarrassing for you because you know that your whole fat stomach is hanging out underneath that crop top. But also it's bad for everyone else because they have to see it. Not good. Mm-hmm. Not good. Really. That's not right.
So this is how they further justify their decision in North Korea. They say, we must be wary of even the slightest sign of the capitalistic lifestyle and fight to get rid of them. They've outlawed all but 15 non-socialist haircuts, and they insist on
What's a socialist haircut?
I would love to get my hands on this actual guide. I want to see the graphics, the signs, how they all lay it out.
I mean,
they've issued an order on proper hairstyles instead. So it doesn't just stop on mullets, though. Spiky hair and dyed hair as well are no longer authorized. Candace, you're not going.
Not that I wanted to, but now that I've been banned, I feel like, how dare you? I feel very outraged that I would not be allowed into North Korea. But also, let's look at the fact that this man, like, also did hire shorter bodyguards. Like, I mean, so, like, let's also just say,
there's a lot of issues.
If I rule the country and I wanted to be perceived as the most attractive person there, there's a lot of things I'd be banning too.
Well, let me remind you what his haircut looks like, because it's not exactly great either. All right, so here's his. I mean, that's what a shit haircut that is. What's going on there? It's like,
I mean, the worst part, he didn't even try and fade it down. Like, that's what I don't get. Like, he should have faded it a little so it has, like, you know, color radiation. Oh, but
It's basically like you put a pot on his head and you just cut everything underneath
he's
the pot.
So cute.
And then you and you made the top part poofy. You know, he likes it a bit high and poofy because it gives him extra height. He's not cute.
I mean, if we didn't know he was a raging, insane dictator, you just want to play with his cheeks. You'd be like, holy crap, man, this dude. And I think that's exactly the reason he's doing this.
God, no.
To show us I'm a mean, bad dude. Don't be playing with my cheeks, okay?
All right. Well, there's another story that's going to annoy some people, but I don't think Candace and I have a problem with this. We've already kind of indicated that we like the idea of this. There's a Las Vegas strip club that is going to be hosting a pop-up COVID vaccine clinic, vaccinating guests when they get perks, including a dance from a stripper for coming into. Now, you know, we really tore a piece off of Mayor Bill de Blasio, who was offering New Yorkers a hamburger and fries for getting a vaccine. In New York, you get a Shake Shack burger. And, you know, I suppose some people, you need to persuade them with free stuff. I mean, we know that happens in this country. The ANC does it with T-shirts. But this is obviously some kind of ploy to get the people of Las Vegas who, I mean, if there's ever a place in America where people are kind of crazy, it's probably Vegas. Florida's maybe up there as well. But Vegas is definitely not a sane place, right? It's mad. It's lunatic. It's in the middle of the desert. It's all gambling and hookers and used to be the mob's playground. But to get people there to actually go and get vaccinated, they have to throw in some kind of added extra. So if you can get a stripper to give you a dance, maybe you'll go for your vaccine.
I mean, yeah. Do it. Like, I hate that my name is Candace just for this reason that, like, you know, if you're going to get a dance from Candy at the club, like, damn. But, you know,
So hey, if you ever became a stripper, you know, at
I
least...
mean, I'm pretty much named for it. Candy Mama. Like, I mean, it
you
is
are,
just,
can, it's, Candy Mama.
It's a name made in stripper heaven.
Get some candy from the sugar mama.
Like,
I mean, come get your vaccine and some candy on the side. It just it just makes so much sense to me. I'm mad at myself that I love this idea so much.
Well, I mean, listen, your life is not over yet, and you're in the prime of your life at the moment. You could start this in case. Could start this in Cape Town. I mean, Mavericks could do with a competition, right?
Oh my god! I mean, Candace. I started with an OnlyFans when I got here,
exactly.
And now I'm a stripper.
Yes.
I mean,
now you're a stripper.
My career evolution is astounding.
I sincerely hope that none of your family have heard this morning's show, because they're going to think jeez, much less of you if they have.
Candace, oh, no, I'll never be able to look at you the same way now. But it's Larry Flynt's famed Hustler Club, strip club in Las Vegas. That's where the pop up happened.
I love the way Sia says this, like he's been there, and it's Larry Flynt's pop up.
No, well, I've heard a lot about it, and that's where like Lamar Odom had his like. Ooh. He used to frequent that place before he spiraled out of control that horrible, horrible pass-out situation. Yeah. So part of the package that they offered, if you go in and you get vaccinated there, you get a whole special package. But overall, you get a special platinum membership card to the club. You get a free bottle of alcohol on the house. You get dancers from a vaccinated entertainer. And you also get, like, you know, a free meal there. There's quite an extensive meal. So, I mean,
you know,
if not, why not?
You know who else gets a package is the stripper. If you're a lonely old man and you pull in there and you've got nothing to excite you except this COVID vaccine and the stripper. It's unbelievable. My God.
Gareth, you know, the Hustler Club actually, you know, released a joint statement with the state of Nevada, and the state of Nevada and the health authorities there. They actually jointly said how much strip clubs have been suffering over the past year.
I can't think about it.
Yeah, shame.
They've struggled during the pandemic.
Yeah.
But so it should have boomed after, right? As things got lenient, I'd assume that one place that many people would like to fill up would be a strip club. Yeah. You know, so I don't know.
There's a joke there that I don't want to go down and extend.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is part of promoting the strippers. Good morning, strippers. It's 7:16 a.m. They're shaking the body glitter off as they're walking home right now. You know, so, you know, they're trying to promote strip clubs, health and safety there. So we need to help, you know, all various industries that have suffered.
If Ben were here now, he would be saying, Sia, why are you always so mean about strippers? You always have something horrible to say.
I just gave such a good story about strippers. That was inspiring.
And then you made that off-color remark about good morning, strippers, as you wipe the glitter off yourselves as you go home.
You walk home.
Yeah, he really looks down on them in the most obviously superior way. It's just awful.
But see, and I don't get it, because the amount of core muscle you need to do that job actually deserves a medal. I mean, they are athletes. They are athletes of the pole. And I don't appreciate you looking down. I mean,
it is also very hard work, you holding on to that pole and making sure your cesarean section scar doesn't show.
That is so outrageously mean, Sia. Oh, these women are working hard, all right?
Yes.
They work a lot harder than you and me. So
I'm laughing, but I respect anyone that can hustle so that hard. You know, I'm like, go forth and be great.
Natalie says, Candace, you could call it the candy shop, your strip club.
Yes.
There we go.
And Natalie, I'll even have a soundtrack, 50 Cent, you know. I'll take you to the candy shop. I mean, my life is made. I've got a shop. I'm a stripper. I'm an OnlyFans. I'm going to be rich, guys. By the time you get me next time, I'm going to be in glitter and sparkles, dusting it off as we start the show.
And you can have Sia, come and MC the main show at like 10 o'clock at night. And he can go, somebody come get her. She dances like a stripper.
I can see this all. I can see it.
You can see, you can see how seriously we're taking all of this, can't you? It's ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is great business advice, you know? Mm. Good for them.
Yeah. Do it for the people. Yeah. And throw in your vaccination. All of it. It works. It works.
Vaccination. So are you...
I'm pretty certain there are some guys who are going to the strip club like, hey... Gotta go and get safe. Gotta go and
sorry,
get my
baby.
Shot. Meanwhile,
I couldn't go down the road to the clinic. I'm just gonna go down to Sarah quickly and get my vax. You know?
So I'm kind of curious. Hang on. I'm kind of curious. Are you getting the vaccine anytime soon? Have you got any plans to get that soon? Or are you one of those people like me and Sia who are just gonna wait for our turn? And if it happens because we have to travel, we'll get it. But we're not really phased.
Absolutely. I'm with you guys. I'm not going to be the front liner. Like, I'm not going to just like be like, hey, I'm here for my vaccine. No.
Okay.
But I mean, if I have to travel, I'm also not like an anti-vaxxer. That's like, oh my gosh, my liver, my organ. No, I'm just like, whatever, you know, if I have to travel, I'll do it. So
okay.
I'm not fazed by it really.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are probably people who are a lot more vulnerable, and we've discussed this on the show before, so I don't want to go over old territory, but you know, someone asked me last night, are you going to get it? And I said, no. Not in a hurry, but I'll get it if I need to travel, because I feel like I probably maybe had it already last year this time. In fact, it was exactly around this time last year that I was probably sick, pretty sick for like 2-3 days. And then after that, I was fine. I didn't have any of the loss of taste or smell. I didn't go for a test afterwards, but I think I might have had it. And then, you know, I got on with my life. And if I have had it, then I'm probably immune. But if they say to me, you've got to have a vaccine to travel, and I'll go and get the vaccine. It's not the end of the world. I think if you're older and if you have comorbidities, then it's your best chance, and you may as well go and do it, you know?
I'm with you.
All right. So here's Winsterian Pikachu, who says, can we please have Candace as a regular? I don't know if that means a regular on the show or a regular in the strip club, but okay. Yeah. And Hadmin.
Oh, God.
And Hadmin pointing out again, which is just so true, Sia trying to pretend that he doesn't hate strippers. I think Sia's jealous of strippers because they have the life.
He wishes.
Yes, I think so. Because we know that he's a gold digger. We know Sia will marry.
And he ain't messing with no broke beep.
Exactly.
Yep. Yes.
We know he's going to marry some rich dude one day. And that's pretty much the same agenda as a stripper, except that the stripper in this case might have more going for them than Sia does. Think about it.
Because they've got more opportunities here. If you look at it just from an opportunity standpoint, you know, they have more of a rotation than you have currently.
Correct.
So
they see more clients than Sia does in a week.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you guys about the time I bumped into strippers from the Lollipop Lounge while I was ordering pizza?
What
happened?
It was the most bizarre situation. You know, I had gone out and we were out with my friends and we were drinking, and on our way home, stopped somewhere to get pizza. And so it was only after the fact where I thought, was I imagining all of this? Was I just drunk, or did that really happen? You know, you get into this pizza place. It's at like 1 or 2 a.m. So it's very quiet and there's only like, you know, sprinkling of people, like maybe 3 people in the whole store. And there were these two ladies who it's quite a stereotype, but they had these coats on, but underneath you could tell that it was quite, you know, these short dresses.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, let me just make some conversation with them.
Okay.
And
so you weren't being judgy. You weren't being an asshole.
No. I thought, oh, we were just making conversation, and turned out they were strippers from the Lollipop Lounge.
Did you ask how you can get in, Sia? Like, if they're taking in your auditions, Magic Mike style. You know, I could see you sliding down the runway, you know, you part.
But you got to be so careful. Like, these days you have to be extremely careful, because you assume that because they were wearing very short skirts and clear heels that they were strippers. But, you know, they could have been anybody. I mean, I'll never forget when I sent Alan Ford out to go and find us a prostitute to interview on my show when we were doing the morning show still on 702 all those years ago. Alan was my producer, and he went out into the streets of, I think he was in, I don't want to get this wrong. What's that place near the Turfantine Racecourse? I can't remember the name of that suburb. Mm-hmm. If anybody knows, then let me know. But it was like there used to be quite a few ladies of the night working on some of those streets back in those days. And Alan went there, and I was going to recruit one of these girls, right, to get them on the show so that we could interview them about what their lives are like and what kinds of things they do and, you know, how much money they earn and what their families think and so on. So he goes off and he's standing on – it's Rosettenville. That's what it was. It was Rosettenville. Mm-hmm. So he's standing on the corner of this street in Rosettenville, and he's nervous because he doesn't really know Rosettenville. And this woman is standing there, and she's wearing a very, very short skirt and a leather jacket, and she's got poofy hair, like 80s-style poofy hair, and she's smoking a cigarette, and she's got the very high heels. And Alan makes the connection in his head that she must be one of these girls he's looking for, right? So – he goes up to her and he goes, "Hi, you know, I'm from wherever, and this is what we want to do. We want to interview you." And she goes, "Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. I'd love to be interviewed." And he says to her, "Well, we'll organize your transport and everything else." She goes, No, I've got a car. Don't worry, I'll come through." He says, "And you know, we can talk a little bit about what you do for a living and how that impacts your life."
Still being vague.
Yeah. And so she's going, "Oh, that's great. That's terrific. Yeah, I really like the idea of that." And he goes, "And then, you know, how much you charge the men who you sleep with?" And she goes, "Excuse me?"
Ooh.
So he goes, "Ooh. You know, prostitution." She pulls out Ooh. Her handbag and she starts hitting him down the street, and he's screaming and running. And you know what Alan Ford's like? Everything's dramatic. So he just makes it to his car, and this woman's still screaming at him. She's like, "I'm not a hooker, you fucking asshole. I'm a secretary."
Gosh.
So,
yeah, you don't want to play around with people, with people like that.
Oh, well, people like that. That's judgy. People like that. What do you mean, people like that? You hate
what's superiority?
You know, exactly.
You know, clearly, I will not be able to say anything right on this topic. No, I knew definitely that they were strippers, because when we were talking, I started speaking about Cliff Central and what we do here, and they go, "Oh, you guys just had Gigi on. Who's the owner?"
She owns Lollipop Lounge, yeah.
So that's how I had to ask, "Oh, how do you know Gigi?" They're like, "Oh, no, we work for lounge."
Listen, there was a point in my 20s where I was so proud that I knew all the strip club owners. I knew Andrew Phillips from The Grand. I knew Lolly Jackson from Teasers. I knew Gigi at the Lollipop. Mm. I was so proud of that. I was like, all my friends would say, "Well, you know, can you organize for us to go?" I was like, yeah, let me just speed dial Gigi here.
Hello,
Gigi. We're coming through.
I need to get in.
I'm coming through. Could you get us a table for like 5 of us at 9 o'clock? And she'd be like, "Yeah, sure." God. I thought that was to me more important than having the president's number at one point.
Oh my gosh.
I can see why, but okay, just on the stereotype. So I do know some girls who dance at Mavericks, which Gareth very
well. Okay. Yes, great.
And they actually come across, they translate, like in everyday life, you'd never say, "Oh, she's a stripper." Mm-hmm. She's like, they're very modest, they're very chill, they're very low key, until you realize they're a stripper. But they're really cool girls. Like, and a lot of them aren't even from South Africa. Some of them are from like Ukraine, Russia, you know, whatever. But they actually, like, you would not say it. Like, they work hard for their money. I will tell you that much. And also they sacrifice their eating all the time. You know, when we go out, they never have to order. So I'm always like, let me treat you. Let me be the one who treats you. Because I know they're not going to eat. And I always seem like the generous friend. When low key, I'm just like, you know, I'm like,
"Good
don't
point."
So
this really,
you should come to Cape Town, visit me, and I'm going to take you out with him without you knowing, and then I'm going to convert you. I'm going to make you a stripper lover.
That's a good idea. you might even enjoy it, Sia. I mean, you know, it's like a lot of girls go to strip clubs and they actually have the time of their lives, and it's not because they're there to see naked women. It's because of the vibe. Anyway, we'll leave that alone for a minute. Annette says, just like the assuming that someone might be a prostitute or a stripper, you must never assume someone is pregnant because they may just be fat. That's a very good point. We've covered that many times on the show. And then coming out of left field with nothing related to anything we've spoken about today, Errol jumps in with, "Stalin was much more evil than Hitler." Well, Errol,
Well, Errol, you should listen to a podcast called The Dictators, where I've said this in the previous episode too, but they speak about both Stalin and Hitler's got a 5-part, whereas Stalin only had a 2-part.
Oh, so
that's all I'm going to say. Check it out.
But
I know. Don't look at me like that.
Errol just comes out of nowhere. So Kala's coming up. So Kala thinks he's caught me out here. Gareth, the Grand was not in existence in your 20s. It's a bit more recent. You are right. But before the Grand, Kala, I'll tell you, there was a place called the Titty Twister, which was on the other side of Rivonia. Yes. Don't you remember that? No, you're too young. There was a place called the Titty Twister. No, the Titty Twister was well known. It was the first establishment that Andrew built, and it was very impressive. It had this bar and a sunken seating area like an amphitheater around it. It was quite an impressive place, and the Titty Twister was really the forerunner of the Grand.
So, that name, though.
So you didn't catch
it. Yes, I'm thinking about
the Grand because... I mean, I can't see like people being like, "Hey, let's meet at the Titty Twister." Wow.
It comes from that movie, which you have to watch if you haven't seen it before, called From Dusk Till Dawn, featuring, I think George Clooney was in it, Salma Hayek. Who else was in that movie? It was a really, really good movie. It was hilarious. It's all about these vampires who live in the strip club in Mexico. And they like feast on the people who come to the strip club, and all the strippers are vampires, and it's just wild. It's the most awesome movie, and it opens up with this scene with like a whole lot of bikes and cars coming in, and it's desert, so there's sand and there's lights flashing on this building, that the Titty Twister, and then these guys come in. And Cheech Marin, who's this brilliant Mexican actor, he's a comedian actually, he's standing in front with a loudhailer. And he goes like this. He goes,
"Come on in, pussy lovers. Everybody's going to get half of all the pussy today. Oh, we got horse pussy, chicken pussy, dog pussy, smelly pussy. We got fresh pussy off snapping. We got blonde, we got brunette, we got redhead, we got all kind."
It's unbelievable. Okay. So that's where it comes from.
Wow.
That's where the name that you
need. I can see why it was so inspiring.
It was very inspiring, and it's such a beautifully, beautifully written screenplay as well. But here we are, Steph saying it's Quentin Tarantino. That's quite right. Who directed that and produced it? You got to play that scene. Well, I pretty much just did now, says Tracy. And Peter says Dusk Till Dawn had a brilliant soundtrack. It did indeed. So if you two have some homework.
Juliette Lewis also starred in it.
Juliette Lewis. So Sia and Candace, you need to watch From Dusk Till Dawn.
I will be watching it.
Okay. You won't be sorry. And then next have you on, I want you to give us one of those. You remember how you used to have to write a movie review for school?
Oh, yes.
I want you to give us one of those.
I will do that. I will do that for you guys.
Look, names like The Grand or Mavericks, you can pass off for other things. Something as blatant as the Titty Twister. I want to find out what all of their service providers are like. Because it's one thing if you work there, but then it's another if you're just going there for the day just to install a phone line.
And also like when you're swiping your card, right? Like it's one thing
to
have the Grand appear on your statement.
It never does.
It's another thing.
No, you're wrong.
Oh, it doesn't. The Grand does. No. Like the Titty Twister.
No.
Going to your accountant and being like, okay, we need to work on my finances. Yes. And Titty Twister's just like, swipe it.
No.
It's like, maybe just slow down on the Titty Twister. Just like.
It comes up. I remember teasers used to come up as something, something piano lounge.
Oh, Lord.
Oh.
Yeah, so it sounded it sounded perfectly legit. So you wouldn't end up with something in your credit card statement that said, Jesus, 500 rand, you know, it would say the something, something, furniture emporium or whatever it was. So
people had the furniture emporium at 1 a.m, Gareth?
Well,
really?
you'd need a very sharp accountant to know what was going on there. That's what it is.
Swiping 3,000 rands like Norma Gigaba.
Yeah, Norma Gigaba. Listen, if Norma Gigaba wants to make more than 3,000 rand or have more than 3,000 rand to spend, she may be thinking about opportunities of opening up her own Titty Twister as well. Maybe she can come and work for you in Cape Town, Candace.
Thank you, Gareth. No. Will the candy shop will see if we're hiring?
You see if you can.
I don't know. She seems a little problematic. See if you know, I don't want my books to be cooked so early in my business, you know.
Too much on the line. You don't want to risk it all now.
Well, we got to
read. I read an article yesterday that spoke about just how out of touch Norma is with a statement like that. Yes, it's her reality, but also it's kind of indicative to people in power and the likes of politicians who just off the cuff say there's nothing that I can do with 3,000 rand. Yeah. I think it was an opinion column on Times Live. This way I read it yesterday. They listed so much that you can do with 3,000 rands that most people in South Africa need. You know, they rattled off statistics of unemployment where we still have people queuing up just for 350 rands a month. And so to say, 3,000 rands, it's nothing.
It's probably one of the most careless things anyone has said for a long time. It really did get people very fired up and very angry, and rightly so. So Norma Gigaba has some splaining to do. But we also have to get to Blind History for this morning. So I first of all want to say a big thank you to Candace Mama for being with us this morning. It seems that you're a big hit. Lots of people are saying you should come back and you should be part of the show more often. And we love having you. So if we can make that happen, we will. And we've got to get to a new episode of Blind History, episode 7. This morning we're looking at Hernan Cortez, who is the conquering hero of South America to the Spanish, anyway, to the people who lived in South and Central America. This guy was a monster, and he brought destruction, death, disease, and all kinds of ugliness to their world. And it's quite a story. So I'm going to get straight to that. That's a new episode of Blind History for your listening and viewing pleasure this morning. Let's get to it. We're going to go here. Let me just try and figure this out quickly. Here we are. Share screen. There we go. Mm-hmm. And Hernan Cortez. I'm new to this. Here we go. All right, everybody. You ready to go? Let's do this. Through a verdant tropical forest, the young hunter squinted into the sun. On the great blue sea, he took in a magnificent sight. Shimmering sails billowing off the tall masts of a fleet of enormous ships. As they sailed closer, he thought the men on board might well be gods, but he would find out they were anything but. Those gods, the conquistadors, would eviscerate the ancient people of the New World, pull down their temples, and destroy their homeland. In just a few years, they would virtually erase the life the hunter once knew, and the man who held them all in the palm of his hand was called Cortez. Welcome to another episode of Blind History. I'm Gareth Cliff and my co-host is Anthony Meterer. How are you, Ant?
Very well, and you, Gareth?
Awesome. We're going a little further and a little wider than we usually do in the next episode or two. We're looking at people who might not be considered to be like the most important or significant rulers, which is, you know, largely what history focuses on, but they had wide-ranging effects on mythology and on history, and obviously on the decline and fall of, in the case of the guy we're talking about today, Hernan Cortez, the decline and destruction of an entire empire.
Correct. And as you explained, they were definitely legends, but maybe not heroes.
Yeah. I mean, the shadow of Hernan Cortez has loomed long and large over present day Mexico. You know, within a few short years of landing in the country in 1519, he and his comrades would be responsible for the destruction of the entire Aztec empire and their culture. I mean, that's a horrible thing to think about. And, you know, he celebrated in Spain, but in Mexico, I suppose they've never really recovered.
No, they haven't. And it was genocide in those times and in during history. People don't necessarily look at it like that. But in this case, I think it was significant, over 200,000 people. The Aztecs, you know, of centuries and centuries of development and of what they've stood for and what they've brought to the world just wiped out.
I've got a little sculpture on my wall in my downstairs veranda, which is the Aztec calendar, you know, that famous Aztec yes. calendar clock, which was supposed to have been, you know, 1,000-year calendar. And that's pretty much how I picture when I think of Aztec. And in this case, they were actually called the Mexica, M-E-X-I-C-A-H people. They lived on a number of islands in a lake, which is now gone, in exactly the space which is occupied by the center of Mexico City now. But those people were, they were a very advanced and well-developed and complex civilization by the time he came along. There are contemporary pictures of Cortez, which portray him as a typical conquistador, you know, the neatly trimmed little beard and that steely gaze. But it seems that he had this uncontrollable ambition and a deadly determination. He was one of those people who just came along at the right time to cause havoc.
Yeah, and I think often, you know, like many of our legends that we've covered in history, I mean, charisma is what he had, and that's how he got all the people to go with him. And they just couldn't snuff him out. He just would not go away.
Well, he was born in Spain in 1485. He was born to a family of noble blood, but they were poor. They were actually called Hidalgos. And these people were quite common in Spain, but there were lots of nobility with little bits of money, you know, so they were of good stock, but they didn't have any cash. So maybe that's what explains his upbringing and his greed later on, and was probably the driving force behind all that ambition that we're talking about.
There was a relative, I think one of his uncles, that was a famous military man that was fighting Italy and was one of Spain's top military strategists. So definitely that did run in his blood.
So, I mean, what else do we know about his early life? Because he trained to be a lawyer, and then he took to a ship and went off to the New World looking for money.
Correct. But something that did plague him through his life was that he really loved the female sex. He really... And he was in trouble. It created a lot of trouble. And he had the restless nature about him, and he wanted to go and see the New World. He made a decision to go, and he got what money he had together, and his father had managed to get him on an expedition that was well set up, and he would be well supported, and he actually literally missed the boat. And the reason why he missed the boat, he was upstairs in one of these villas sleeping with a lady, and the husband came home, and he had to jump out the window, and he broke his arm. So he couldn't go on the voyage, and he had to wait to repair a bit. But that just gave you an inclination of what was to come. Some of his key relationships fell apart because of this challenge that he did have.
While we're talking about his relationships, there's this rumor that he murdered his wife. We know that he also had an affair with an indigenous woman in Mexico who also became his translator, and he had children with her.
Yeah, and Martin was the son who became the first proper Mexican, as they call it. So it was a mixture of between the Europeans and then the natural population.
There's a lot of complicated stuff that happened in the middle of his life, and it's probably not that interesting to most people, so we can skim through it. But he landed in Hispaniola, which is the island which is now half Haiti, half Dominican Republic. And he came under the wing of some quite important government officers there. You know, he was quite a dodgy guy. Like, he did a lot of things in Cuba and Hispaniola that you'd probably consider to be not very ethical. He was trying to get ahead, you know, like so many people in the 1500s, he was just trying to get ahead. And he would lie and deceive and steal and pretty much do whatever he needed to do to get to positions of authority and power. And most importantly, to get his own small army under his wing.
But he was well liked. The general population of these settlements loved him. And also Velasquez, the governor of Cuba, it wasn't called Cuba at the time, it was his protege, and he really saw great things for him. And so he had this lavish lifestyle behind the scenes, and he spent a lot, but he couldn't do wrong until he had an affair or ultimately married Velasquez's, I believe, sister-in-law. But apparently he stood up at the altar. There was some story, so he wasn't allowed to go on this expedition. And
he basically thwarted the guy. He was forbidden to go on this expedition, and he just ignored this governor of Cuba and went ahead and did it anyway.
Exactly. And then from that point on, there was bad blood between them.
Now, he went off with some cannon. He had some men on horseback. It wasn't a huge army. You know, he basically had a fair number of soldiers with him. Enough to cause some trouble, but not not enough to conquer the whole, you know, Mexican Empire at that point, or so we thought.
There were so many stories of this incredible city that was the size of what they knew as Constantinople or Naples in Europe, with these big palaces and gold everywhere. And so he was absolutely drawn to that. And every single cent he had, he put into this expedition. And he did put together a reasonably sized force, but he was actually a very good strategist. So a lot of the battles he had with the many tribes, he did with a smaller force.
So who were these Mexica? Who was this empire and who was Moctezuma?
So Moctezuma was the king, the emperor, the head of the Aztecs. And there were a lot of other tribes around the area that were allowed to run autonomously, but they had to pay homage of whatever sort it would be.
Like vassal states.
Exactly, like vassal states. And often what they had to pay in terms of taxes, and that was human sacrifice. I mean, each week, I believe, or could it also be daily, they would have human sacrifices. It was part of their beliefs. And that was one of the things that absolutely repelled the Spanish, you know, coming with the Catholicism, and they couldn't believe what they're doing. But having said that, you know, they were shocked, but while they were scalping half the flippant Aztecs, so it was very ironic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was this idea that because they believed they were superior, conversion of the indigenous population was a priority to them. And they hid a lot of their ugliness and their genocidal, I suppose, what would you call it, genocidal impulses. They hid under the cloak of, oh, we're converting these people and bringing them into civilization. In effect, both sides were as violent as each other, and it must have been a very bloody time. But these Aztec temples that they would sacrifice people on, they'd basically cut out their hearts while they were alive and then throw the body down the stairs. You know, it's really, it's hectic. Quite something.
And these beautiful palaces, but they stank because of the human sacrifice of it. But if we can just imagine this expedition then landing on the peninsula of modern-day Mexico, and what made him so different, what made Cortez successful, and he was one of the greatest, I mean, literally next to Columbus in terms of finding the new world, etc. He was really, really up there, and he wanted to be, he told everybody he was up there. I think that's, there was a lot of insecurities there. But when he actually got to the peninsula, he met a gentleman by the name of Geronimo, and he ended up being an interpreter for him, which was massive because it helped him then infiltrate into the smaller tribes, and he found out that the smaller tribes actually hated being vassal states of the Aztecs. So that's what built up his small army into a significant army and then managed to be able to take on the Aztecs. But further to that, he also met a lady in the tribes, and she could speak all the languages. So Geronimo then became null and void, obsolete, yeah. Yes. And so he was tossed aside, and then he took a real liking to her. And that was basically the setup that allowed him to actually go towards this massive golden city.
Yeah, it was called Tenochtitlan. I mean, I'm not sure if my pronunciation is right, but it was built, as we said earlier, in the middle of this beautiful lake. That whole lake is now no longer there. I mean, it's, you know, Mexico City's built on top of it. And all the would have been, what would have been the temples of that old city are now covered over with cathedrals. They're trying to excavate that area, by the way, and they found that whole libraries of codices were burned, and not a single one of those original Aztec texts survives, because what these conquistadors would do is they assumed their culture was superior in every way and there was nothing to be learned from the Aztecs. And unfortunately, in doing so, they just, it was a campaign of just burn everything and destroy everything that isn't Christian, which meant we lost a huge amount of knowledge about these people. And there are a couple of ruins that you can go and see right in the center of Mexico City, but it must have been beautiful at the time. I mean, you know, to get there, you needed boats, and it was in the middle of this big lake, and the lake was brackish. But one of the reasons that these people were so extraordinary to many Westernizers, they would do what Westerners at the time didn't do. They used to bath twice a day. I mean, the emperor used to bath four times a day, and they used to use beautiful mountain spring water. And they really were an extraordinary civilization.
It's incredible that there was the civilization that had come out in the western part of the universe. I mean, Europe was the center of the world. And suddenly you got this incredible city, and it had waterborne canals to assist with sewerage. They were extremely far advanced, but obviously naive. And there were ways that the Spanish could actually take them out. And the fact that they took them out so quickly showed they had no idea of how to fight against this new enemy. And putting the human sacrifice aside, they peacefully coexisted in this big city.
Yeah, apart from chopping people apart and throwing their heads down the stairs and cutting out their hearts while they were still living, they were very, yeah.
Yeah, in general, they were peaceful. I mean, that shouldn't really, you know, tarnish their reputation at all.
But we do know that one of the ways that he conquered that city was to cut off their fresh water supply.
Yes,
and,
that's true.
And of course, you know, they didn't have steel. So it must have been much more easy to run your steel sword through someone than to fight them with a wooden club. They didn't have any means of fighting back with the same amount of force. So it didn't take too long for Cortes to completely destroy their empire. And of course, he was celebrated at home, and he was forgiven for disregarding the orders of Velasquez. And he was allowed to assume a coat of arms. He was given a noble title, and the people of Spain thought he was a hero, and he still continues to be celebrated in Spain. In fact, there's a monument to him in the city of Medellin in Spain.
But he did have a sort of a, not a love-hate relationship, but I think behind the scenes, people were working against him, like Velasquez, who never went away. And he would go to Charles V and just tell him, you know, how bad this guy was, and he was killing innocent people, and ask him why you destroyed a whole empire, you know, et cetera, and where's the gold and all that. So he kept having to go back to Spain, to King Charles V, and explain why he did it. And some of the letters that he wrote to Charles V about the city, I read these letters and it's incredible. You know, it takes you maybe 20 minutes to read one of the letters, and he goes into such detail of what the Aztecs do every day, and, you know, how they, where they get their food from, all the massive markets they have. So he really did communicate well with Charles V, but ultimately in the end, he died knowing that he was not respected by Charles or the greater Spanish people. And it was only after his death that they started realizing, you know,
what he'd done.
Yeah, what he'd done and how much he had achieved. And there was a saying that said that Charles no longer wanted to see him. He couldn't get an audience with the king anymore. And he pushed through a crowd and he finally got to the king and he said to the king, I've conquered more provinces and given you and Spain more provinces than you've got cities. And, but you know, that might have been a fabrication.
I just want to talk a little bit about Moctezuma, who was the emperor of the Aztecs. He welcomed Cortes into the capital city. He said, come in, bring your men. We'll put you up in luxury. You can have food and wine and women, and, you can have as much gold as you want, because he realized that was all he was after, is gold. And he said, you know, we don't have a lot of gold, but whatever there is, you can have. And of course, by doing that, by saying, here's all the gold we have, these conquistadors said to themselves, there must be more. So we'll have to kill some people and take some land.
There's also stories which they say is not actually true, is that he thought Cortes was a god. And
Quetzalcoatl.
Yes, correct. The sea god. And ultimately, in the end, they didn't just fall off the moon, these guys. They've been very successful. And He had a strategy, you know, to work out how to conquer these strange-looking Europeans, and he thought that the best way to do it was to embrace them up front. But that did backfire for him, because ultimately, in the end, he was taken hostage by Cortes for a long period of time. I think it was over a year before they decided to fight back. But when they fought back, there was the story that they ousted Moctezuma and they replaced him with another emperor, and they may have killed him. Or the Spanish might have killed him. So there has been a dispute or debate who actually killed Moctezuma.
Eventually, his story doesn't end particularly gloriously. You rightly say he was ignored by the king and, you know, he had to kind of fight for his place in history. But he died of, what, dysentery and pleurisy, which is not a great way to go. So problems of the lungs and problems on the rear end. And he did, to his credit, leave all of his children, all of them, the Mexican children and the white children in Europe. He left lots of money to. They were well cared for in his will, all of their mothers. He requested that his will and his remains eventually be buried in Mexico, not in Spain, which I think is pretty interesting. And before he died, he had the Pope remove the natural status of his four children, in other words, legitimizing them in the eyes of the church, including the famous Martin that you mentioned earlier, the son that he had with Dona Maria. That was said to be his favorite of his children.
I think they did acknowledge, I mean, next to Columbus, they acknowledged, you know, the influence and what he did, you know, in the New World. And we didn't mention it, but once they'd formed the settlement and he had a royal title, I mean, he had to keep going. He had a very restless nature. And he went north, which is very interesting. He went north into the northern parts of Mexico. That's incredible that what he actually was prepared to do. A lot of these exhibitions just went flat on him, and he wasn't very successful. He killed 3/4 of his team climbing over mountains. And
I mean, the death toll here is just crazy. You know, if we think about it today, in order to explore, in inverted commas, these places, and in order to conquer for the Spanish throne and to spread Christianity, all of those things which he thought he was doing for good, I mean, the number of bodies in his wake is just extraordinary.
Yeah, and then also, like you said, to spread Christianity, but they also spread smallpox. I mean, that was also bringing all those diseases from Europe. But finally, when he went back to Europe and he'd been snubbed because one of his fellow countrymen was now famous for taking Peru, and so he was getting all the accolade. So he went after Barbarossa, which we spoke about in a previous Blind History.
Yeah, the pirate.
Correct, yes. And he went after him, and he got injured in that. And then not long after them, as you mentioned, he got the shits, so to speak. He basically died of dysentery, and that was quite sad.
Well, there is a lizard named after him, a kind of subspecies of Mexican lizard, which is called Cortez. So he got that named after him. And of course, there are lots and lots of statues and representations all over. There have been movies made. There have been theater productions put together. And Mexico is still dealing with the aftermath of what happened there.
Correct. And that's a long time ago. It's amazing. It really is.
He was, yeah, if nothing else, a man who let nothing and no one get in his way.
Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's quite a saucy story, the story of his first wife. Her name was Catalina Suarez, and she was promised to him by old Diego Velázquez, who seems to have been pressuring him to marry her. And when he got to New Spain after his conquest, he was less than pleased about this arrangement. And he had to deal with the fact that he'd become involved with this indigenous woman as well. Her name was Malinche. And after a banquet during which the husband and wife argued about Cortez's mistress, Catalina is said to have been found dead in her bedroom. Now, we don't know what killed her. There's still a huge amount of speculation today. It's very mysterious. Although she suffered from poor health and struggled with asthma, many believe that her death had a much more sinister cause, and that maybe Cortez had poisoned her during the banquet. He made sure to have her buried quickly and in relative secrecy, arousing even more suspicion. So that happened while all the other stuff was happening. CliffCentral.com.